From the Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 12, Birth of Emperor Parikshit, starting with Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shaunaka Uvacha, Ashvatam No Prasrishtena Brahma Shirshno Rutejusa Uttaraya Hato Garbha Ishena Jivatapuna. The great sage Shaunaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invisible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. Purport. The sages assembled in the forest of Naimisharanya inquired from Suta Goswami about the birth of Maharaj Parikshit. But in the course of the narration, other topics like the release of the Brahmastra by the son of Drona, his punishment by Arjuna, Queen Kunti Devi's prayers, the Pandavas' visit to the place where Bhishma Dev was lying, his prayers, and thereafter the Lord's departure for Dwarka were discussed. His arrival at Dwarka and residing with 16,000 queens, etc., were narrated. The sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they wanted to turn to the original topic, and thus the inquiry was made by Shaunaka Rishi, so the subject of the release of the Brahmastra weapon by Ashvatthama is renewed. Om Gyanatimarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ramo, Hare Ramo, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The sage Shaunaka said, the womb of Uttara, mother of Maharaj Parikshit, was spoiled by the dreadful and invincible Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama. But Maharaj Parikshit was saved by the Supreme Lord. So this is the sages of Naimisharanya speaking with Shaunaka, hearing from Suta Goswami. So as Prabhupada said in the purport, the real subject matter was about the birth of Maharaj Parikshit, which brought Suta Goswami to the battlefield, to the descriptions of the battlefield of Kurukshetra and the story of Ashvatthama, who would try to abort the child by the Brahmastra weapon. In the course of Suta Goswami narrating that, because in that narration it would be Krishna who protects Maharaj Parikshit in the womb, other narrations and other topics began to be discussed. And then Suta Goswami began to discuss, because it brought Krishna into the picture, even though the question was about Maharaj Parikshit. So after he discussed about Krishna saving the Maharaj Parikshit in the womb, he began to narrate or describe what happened at that time with Krishna leaving Hastinapur, which was such a dynamic spiritual historical narrative, because in his leaving, we see the very rich sentiments of the devotees in relationship to Krishna in the mood of separation from, anticipated separation from Krishna. And therefore, we see Krishna's relation with his devotees. I think Suta Goswami, even though he was asked about Maharaj Parikshit, couldn't help but describe that. It was somewhat relevant to Maharaj Prickett because he, you know, Krishna saved Maharaj Prickett in the womb. But he began to discuss at that time because he knew the whole history. So many other wonderful things happened after Krishna saved Maharaj Prickett. And that was Kunti came, Yudhisthira came, Bhishma Dev, you know, the story of Bhishma Dev. Krishna's departure for Dwarka were discussed. His arrival in Dwarka, his relation with his 16,000 queens, which was discussed in the previous chapter. So the sages were absorbed in hearing such descriptions, but now they're turning to the original topic, and therefore this inquiry by Sharanika Rishi. Pretty straightforward. Text 2. Tasya janma mahabhude karmani cha mahatmana nidhanam chaya daivasit sapretya gatavanyata. How was the great emperor Parikshit, who was highly intelligent and a great devotee, born in that womb? How did his death take place? And what did he achieve after his death? So they're continuing the... There is a Shanaka Rishi is just continuing the questions, which will be the questions in this chapter, and the next in this verse, and the next one will be the subject matter for the rest of the chapter. And Sutta Goswami will begin to describe what happened after... he'll begin to describe, as this chapter says, the birth of Maharaj Prickett. And it'll just, the rest of the chapter basically will be leading up to Maharaj Prickett's birth. His activities and his death will be the subject matter for the rest of the chapter. And Prabhupada discusses this a little bit, about, in the purport about him being cursed by Sringi. This inaugurated the Kali Yuga. The way that Kali Yuga began is that Maharaj Prickett was cursed by Sringi, who was the son of a great sage, but he was an inexperienced Brahmin. And because he misused his position, the Brahmins lost their tejas of power. By improper acting, he lost his tejas, his power. And when the Brahmins lose their power, the whole authority of the society is weakened. In other words, the society has to be ruled. It has to be ruled from the head, and the Brahmins are the head. Society needs a head, and the head gives direction. It rules the rest of the body. But it rules the rest of the body by intelligence. So when a society doesn't have a strong brahminical class, the citizens cannot be ruled or guided in the proper direction. And therefore, people do the wrong things, and society becomes vitiated, disturbed. Which is what basically is happening in ISKCON now also. It's a little political comment, but there's lack of leadership, lack of authority. Why? Because people who are in positions of leadership, who are supposed to be the head of the society, they abuse their authority and deviated from their duties. And we see now Hari Kesh Maharaj, and then before Bhagavan, Bhavananda. So many, this is what Vyasadeva predicted. He predicted that in Kali Yuga the society would become faithless. Why they become faithless? Because people in positions of authority abuse their authority and act improperly. And when that happens, the conditioned souls who need to be managed and ruled, they become faithless and they take an excuse. to become to be independent of authority. And it leads to a type of anarchy individually and collectively, which doesn't lead to anybody's benefit or good. So Prabhupada, somehow or other, in this purport, he chooses to discuss a little bit about coming attractions of Maharaj Prickett's death, because he was such a great devotee that when he was cursed to die, even though, as Prabhupada discussed here, you know, he was able to, he was saved from an untimely death. He was saved in the womb of his mother from a Brahmastra weapon, so he could have counteracted the Brahmin's curse. But he chose not to because, as Prabhupada said, in the purport, he did not want to interfere with the current of time, but he prepared himself to meet death very cheerfully and properly. So in other words, what Bhishma Dev was preaching, he had realized. Death came, and he saw it as the current of time. He saw that this was Krishna's will, and it was Krishna's will to inaugurate Kali Yuga for particular purposes, and also to prepare the setting for the birth of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which was Krishna's manifestation in Kali Yuga. So this is just hints of things to come. And these are questions about that, about what will come. Taridam shrotam icchamo ganditum yari manyase pruhina shradhananam yasya gyanam adachuka. We all respectfully want to hear about him, Maharaj Prickett, to whom Sukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge. Please speak on this matter. So again, the same theme, James. What is that theme? What is the qualification for being a disciple? What is the qualification for being a student? What is the qualification for being a devotee? Their eagerness to hear. They wanted to hear about him, Maharaj Prickett. They were eager to hear. And why were they eager to hear from him? Because he was eager to hear. This was the qualification of Sutta Goswami at the very beginning. They wanted to hear from him. Why? Because he was a good devotee. He was a good disciple. This is the disciplic succession. The disciplic succession is people who are ardent and sincere hearers. And the ardent and sincere hearers, they become the gurus. So the disciplic succession is not a line of gurus, it's a line of disciples. It's also a line of gurus. But it's really a line of disciples. Because disciples make gurus. People who are disciplined and sincere and want to hear. Now, I'm assuming you'll have time to go over this purport, but Prabhupada discusses, you see, Sukadeva Goswami imparted transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Prickett during the remaining 7 days of his life, and Maharaj Prickett heard him properly, just like an ardent student. The effect of such a bona fide hearing and chanting of Srimad Bhagavatam was equally shared by both the hearer and the chanter. Both of them were benefited. So these are the processes. And Maharaj Prickett is the example of someone who became perfect by hearing. And Sukadeva Goswami was the example of one who became perfect by speaking. There's also a previous birth. They're both equal in terms of their realization by this process. And the point that's being made here by Prabhupada, which is so wonderful, is that transcendental realization is attained by such serious hearing and chanting and not otherwise. I'm doing these tapes and I'm speaking for what purpose? So that people can hear. Because this is the process of self-realization. Prabhupada said, not otherwise. Prabhupada goes into something in the purport where he describes how the bogus guru, you know, the master injects spiritual force into the disciple by an electric current generated by the master, and the disciple begins to feel the shock. He becomes unconscious, and the master weeps for his exhausting his store of so-called spiritual asset. Prabhupada, this is not the king. This is not the process. Maharaj Prickett did not feel any shock of electric current from the master, nor did he become unconscious while receiving knowledge from the master. So the sages of Naimisharanya were very respectful in hearing about Maharaj Prickett because of his receiving knowledge from Sukadeva Goswami by means of ardent hearing. Ardent hearing from the bona fide spiritual master is the only way to receive transcendental knowledge. So this is the process, ardent hearing. People take initiation, they become disciples, but they have some other idea of how one advances in spiritual life. They have some other conception. Something mystical. Something sentimental. But this is the process, and this is the example that's set. Anytime you have any questions, you can ask. Sutta uvacha apipala dharmaraja pitravadvanjayan praja nispriha sabrakarmebhya krishna padanusevaya. Sri Sutta Goswami said, Emperor Yudhisthira administered generously to everyone during his reign. He was exactly like his father. He had no personal ambition and was freed from all sorts of sense gratification because of his continuing service under the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So, Sutta begins to Sutta Goswami begins to answer his question by describing about Maharaj Prickett's administration, which is not directly answering his question. But again, he's describing the historical setting of Maharaj Prickett's birth, which is based on Yudhisthira, who is the king. It just follows on, because in the beginning of chapter 10, the same thing was there. How is Maharaj Yudhisthira doing? These are the personalities at the time. And to discuss him is non different than discussing Maharaj Prickett, really, in terms of qualifications. And remember, Maharaj Prickett's father was Abhimanyu, who had died. So Maharaj Yudhisthira is practically his father. So he's describing the reign of Maharaj Prickett. And the point here is that he administrated generously to everyone. The king was ruling, but he was not just representing God's controlling and power, because the king is the representative of God, because he represents God's law. But he's not just representing God's law, he's representing God's caring and affection. This is a mistake that authority sometimes makes. You get a position in ISKCON, and then you represent, the law of Prabhupada. But you have to also represent the care and affection of Prabhupada also. So Prabhupada's going to make this point. And he explains from the introduction, there is need for the science of Krishna and human society for all the suffering humanity of the world, and we simply request the leading personalities of all nations to take to the science of Krishna for their own good, for the good of society, and for the good of all people. So it is confirmed herein by the example of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the personality of goodness. Then Prabhupada talks a little bit about this term, Ram Raja. Have you ever heard this term?
Did Gandhi want to establish
that? Everyone in India wants to establish it. It refers to the rule of Maharaj Ramachandra when everything was auspicious and good. So all Indian politicians, and Gandhi was also partly a politician, was Ram Raja. Prabhupada always criticized them because Ram Raja means that God was in the center. They want to have Ram Raja without God. You're not going to have auspicious, powerful, opulent, prosperous kingdom without God. So it's Ram Raja. And they did good. But who they did good for? Praja. Praja means the etymological import is that which is born. Anyone that was born in this kingdom, animals, human beings, everyone, they're all praja. And the king protects all the citizens. And he has the power to rule. And why does he have the power to rule? Krishna, Pada Nusevaya. He has the power to rule because he's rendering service to lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And because he is serving Sri Krishna, the Dami Bhudhyogamha, he has the intelligence how to do it properly. The most important thing in taking a position of leadership is that you have the right conceptions. That's the most important thing. What to do. Then you have to know how to do it. But what to do, especially in a spiritual movement where the success depends on the mercy and shakti of the acharya. So to be successful in Krishna consciousness, the first thing you have to know is the will of Prabhupada. You have to know what to do. And to know what to do, you have to be surrendered to Krishna. And the reciprocate, and when he sees you're surrendered, he gives you his mission, he gives you his order, he gives you the intelligence to do it. So this is the most important thing, that he was surrendered to Krishna's service, which means he was selfless. A leader also has to be selfless. If he has personal ambition, he won't work for the benefit of the people, he'll work for his own personal aggrandizement. So working for Krishna also meant working for the benefit of everyone else. Because it means fulfilling Krishna's mission in this world, which is to protect the citizens and maintain the citizens for the higher endeavor of Krishna consciousness. And to focus them, therefore, on the worship of Krishna. Prabhupada always gives the example, like watering the root of a tree. The leaves and branches are naturally replenished. The king is engaging all the citizens in prescribed duties. That's the duty of the king. There's no unemployment. Everyone has to do their duty. They're not allowed to be unemployment, laziness. Everyone is engaged in their duty. And therefore, when that people are doing their prescribed duties, that's yajna, that's the sacrifice. And Krishna is there and everything becomes prosperous. So these are all his qualities as a king. He knew the science of Krishna. Because he knew the science of Krishna, he knew what to do. He knew how to satisfy everyone. Therefore, a previous verse is described, I'm not sure what purport, that the king has to be a Mahabhagavat. Because he has to satisfy everyone. It's so hard to satisfy everyone with conflicting interests. So his intelligence has to be empowered. So an ideal king has no personal ambition. There was no place for sense gratification because all his senses at all times are engaged in the loving service of the Supreme Lord, which includes his parts and parcels. Sampada kratavo loka mahishi brataro mahi jambudvipadi patyam cha yashashchatri divam gatam. News even reached the celestial planets about Maharaj Yudhisthira's worldly possessions, the sacrifices by which he would attain a better destination, his queen, his stalwart brothers, his extensive land, his sovereignty over the planet Earth, and his fame. So here, this is describing the devotional service, the previous verse, the devotional service of Maharaj Prickett and the effect it had, his personality had on ruling the kingdom. everything was auspicious, and the news even reached the celestial kingdoms. It reached the divine realm, his fame. Kimte kama sura spaha mukunda manaso dvija adi jaru mudam ragya shudatasya yate tare. O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. This also shows this is the nature of devotional service. Even when devotional service is practiced, well, even when it's practiced at the level of Bhava Bhakti, there's happiness that comes, which is inclusive of all other happinesses and superior of all other happinesses. And therefore, the devotee does not need to seek anything else. He's completely nadanam najanam nasundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janman eshvat bhavata bhakti hoitaki tvai. He doesn't want wealth. He doesn't want women. He doesn't want followers. He's completely satisfied. Yudhisthirajam dada sutam Bharat Maharaj. Although he's 24 years old, he had all opulence and wealth and kingdom. He gave up everything as easily as one gives up stool after evacuation. Vishyavini vartante niraharasya dehana raso rajam raso pyastya brahmjusvana vartate. When one has that higher taste of Krishna consciousness, easily he gives up all other things. There's a whole chapter in the Nectar of Devotion on it called Devotional Service Surpasses Liberation. Verse after verse after verse. Now, one who has devotional service is completely satisfied and has no other desires, even for liberation. There's three pleasures, bhukti, mukti, and bhakti. Bhukti is sense gratification. Mukti is liberation. The happiness of liberation is greater than the happiness of sense gratification. But even that cannot compare to bhakti. And the example that's given in the verse is a hungry man. He's never satisfied by anything other than food. In other words, basically what Prabhupada is saying is the real need is devotional service. Why? You know, we can always now refer to previous verses. Why? Because that's our dharma. And what is dharma? Dharma is that which sustains our existence. What sustains our existence is service to Krishna. Because that is our eternal nature. That's what we're made of. We're made, our dharma or eternal nature or religion, what is our religion? Religion is determined by what we are and what we're made for. What we are is we're servants of Krishna, and what we're made for? We're made for his service. And when you act naturally, you're satisfied and sustained. Just like when someone eats food, then he's satisfied. He doesn't need anything else. So Prabhupada is making this point. He was satisfied. And nothing else satisfies him except devotional service. Nothing else. Because he was absorbed. He was so detached because he was absorbed.
Matur garba gato vira satata brigunandana tadarsha purusham kanchit Dayamano Stratejasa. O son of Bhrigu, Shonaka, when the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashvatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. So Shonaka is...
Now he's explaining what was seen before, what was told before. Because what was described before in the beginning of the eighth chapter, when Krishna was about to leave after the battle of Kurukshetra, and then Uttara came running towards him in great distress that there was a brahmastra being thrown at her to abort her child, and then Krishna entered and manifest in the womb to protect Maharaj Prickett. So we have heard previously of the protection of Maharaj Prickett. We heard about it from the outside. In other words, people viewing it externally. But now we will hear what is looked at from the view of Maharaj Prickett himself inside the womb. So now we're going to see what Maharaj Prickett saw. He was described as Veera. Veera means the great fighter. He was a Kshatriya. So Prabhupada said, even in that helpless condition, the child Prickett endured the unbearable temperature due to his being a great fighter by nature. Veera means chivalrous. So they're beginning to describe his great quality. Even from the womb, he had such character, such determination. And it's interesting because when they describe in Nectar of Devotion the qualities of Bhava Bhakti, and they describe the qualities of perseverance, the example is given of Maharaj Prickett, who was hearing the Bhagavatam, but not eating, not sleeping, not drinking for 7 days, tolerating all sorts of distress, but telling the sages around him that I'm completely satisfied because I'm hearing Krishna Katana and the association of devotees. I'm completely satisfied. So just like Maharaj Yudhisthira was completely satisfied, he was a Prema Bhakta. Maharaj Prickett is a Prema Bhakta. Completely satisfied, undisturbed by anything in this world. He was a Nitya Siddha. Maharaj Prickett from his early childhood was worshipping Krishna. He had dolls of Krishna. That's the sign of a great devotee. From his very birth, he was a devotee of Krishna. His very birth. He had two qualifications. He was born in the family of the Pandus. His grandfather was Arjuna. And he had a bona fide guru, Sukadeva Goswami. But right, Prabhupada makes a comment later on in the second canto. Right from birth, we can see that he's a pure devotee. Nitya Siddha. So even in the womb, he sees Krishna. Even in the womb, he's tolerating so much distress.
Angushta matram amalam spurat purata malanam apivya darshanam syamam tadidva sasam achutam.
He, the Lord, was only thumb high, but he was all transcendental. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body. And he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. And thus he was seen by the child. So Krishna saw the Lord. Maharaj Prickett saw the Lord in the heart. Beautiful, blackish, dress of lightning yellow, helmet of blazing gold, right in the womb. Talking about samskaras, or heavy, favorable impressions on the consciousness. Oh, how wonderful.
Srimadya gachaturbahum tapta kanchana kundalam shatajaksham gadapanim atmana sarvato disham paribrahmantam ukabham pramayantam gadam muhu.
The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and eyes blood red with fury. As he loitered about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. So blood red with fury. Why?
Because the improper actions of the Brahmins.
And that's later. Because this is describing the womb. Well, Ashwatthama. Ashwatthama's attacking. He's so furious that his devotee is being attacked. So this is again the essence of bhakti. That by your service and dependence on Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. So he's reciprocating with his devotee. Personally, he loves the devotee. He therefore protects the devotee in the womb. Because someone had dared to attack his devotee, who was defenseless in the womb. He was devotee. He loved Krishna. He took shelter of Krishna. He was defenseless. Therefore, he's reciprocating. He's blood red with fury. So, again, the same themes come out as drops of nectar in the purports. Krishna's reciprocation of his devotee's devotion and love, which is the essence of the Bhagavatam. And he's thumb size. Prabhupada mentions that, but he's God. He has inconceivable potency. He's not limited by any measurement of our calculation. He can become bigger than what we can think of, and he can become smaller than what we can conceive. But in all circumstances, he's the same all-powerful Lord. There's no difference between the thumb-like Vishnu in the womb of Uttara and the full-fledged Narayan. So this is what Krishna, Prabhupada makes the point here. Krishna can assume any form or shape that's suitable to accept the service of the devotee. So naturally, in the womb, he appeared. Absolutely, he appeared like that. But he also appears for us as the Archa-Vigraha, because we have blunt senses, and we're so conditioned, so he appears in a deity form. The Archa-Vigraha. And it's never to be considered material. It's Krishna's energy. And he manifests in that way to accept our service. But it's Krishna, direct personal manifestation of Krishna. To make him accessible to us. Reading from this text 10. Astrateja Swagadaya Niharami Vagopati Vidamantam Sanikarshe Prayakshataka Ityashao. The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. So here the word is parayakshita. It means observing. And from that, he got the name Parikshit. Parikshit means the same thing. The examiner, the observer. So he saw this wonderful scene. And here it also describes the power of Krishna. Even though the Brahmastra, Prabhupada described it as, you know, many more times powerful than the atomic bomb, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew, Krishna was withdrawing the radiation and the power of the Brahmastra. 11.
Viduyata ameyatma bhagavan dharma gubibhu. Mishito dasama sasya taitravan tardade hari.
While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. So, this is a further vision of what Maharaj Prickett is perceiving after this wonderful person, very beautiful person, is withdrawing the radiation. Then he disappears at once. So Prabhupada in the purport what is the word here? Bhagavan, Hari. So he's describing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's unlimited by time and space. So Prabhupada said there's a difference between the activities of the living being and the pervading Lord. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita, where it describes that both the living being and the supreme being are yena sarvam idam tata, that they're pervading. They're both all pervading, but there is a difference. The living being is all pervading only within his body, and Krishna is all pervading everywhere. When I was in Dallas, 1974, Srila Prabhupada came, and the Gurukul boys had prepared to chant some verses, and then Srila Prabhupada asked them if they knew the meaning. I forgot exact verse, but again, Srila Prabhupada was describing the difference between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. Living entity is pervading within his body. Our consciousness pervades all over our body. But the Supreme Lord, as mentioned in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is abhigya. Itara, what is that? He's indirectly indirect. He's conscious of everything. His body is everything. And therefore, he's conscious of everything. And also, these are all descriptions of Krishna by Suta Goswami, or descriptions of what Maharaj Prickett is observing. Also, he's also described here as befittingly is described Dharma Gup, the protector of the righteous. Because he's protecting. Maharaj Prickett is observing him, protecting himself. And Suta Goswami is describing this. Therefore, Krishna is Dharma Gup. He's the protector of the righteous. Srila Prabhupada described, he's herein mentioned as protector of the righteous. Anyone who is surrendered unto the Supreme is righteous. And he's specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. So this is very consistent with our previous conceptions of Dharma. He's protector of one who is dharmic. And what is dharma? Dharma is our eternal nature. And what is our eternal nature? That we're servants of Krishna. So ultimately, he's the protector of those who are his surrendered servants. And this is a theme that seems to be going across this part of the Bhagavatam, which we are discussing this part of the Bhagavatam that is introduced us for the first time to Krishna's devotees. We're introduced to Uttara. We're introduced to Draupadi. We're introduced to Yudhisthira. We're introduced to Kunti. We're introduced to Bhishma Dev. And we see Krishna's relationship with those devotees because they are determined to serve him. And they are dependent on him. They realize their dependence on the Supreme Lord, which is an actual fact. So Krishna reciprocates, and he reciprocates by protecting his devotee. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, called the Most Confidential Knowledge, in the last section of the ninth chapter, this is described that samaham sarvabhuteshu name dveshastanapriya. Krishna is equal to everyone, but he favors his devotee. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadur eva samantavya. Even if he does abominable action, if he's sincerely engaged in Krishna's service, Krishna declares he's a sadhu. Kontiya pritajana hina me bhakta panashti. And he asked Arjuna to declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. So right from his childhood, Maharaj Prickett is observing Krishna's protection of his devotee. So his dharma group. And also Prabhupada said the Lord is the indirect protector of the righteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external energy. So directly or indirectly, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and he's the shelter and protector of the living entities. But for one who surrenders to him consciously, he's more attentive and caring. These are just different descriptions of Krishna as Maharaj Prickett saw him. And he's also Dashama Sasya, one who is dressed by all directions. That means that he's all pervasive. That means that he's also pervasive. So therefore, Prabhupada describes in the purport that he is present everywhere and can appear and disappear at his will from everywhere and anywhere. His disappearance from the sight of the child does not mean that he appeared on the spot from any other place. He was present there, and even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the child. So Krishna is present everywhere. And it's a question of whether he is manifest or unmanifest. Just like the story of Hiranyakashipu, where he challenged Prahlad, is he in the pillar? He's everywhere. Krishna is pervading everything.
Sanukula grahodaye jagye vamshadara pandor puya pandor ivaujasa.
Thereupon, when all the good signs of the zodiac gradually evolve, the heir apparent of Pandu, who would be exactly like him in prowess, took birth. So this describes the birth of Maharaj Prickett. Prabhupada in the purport discusses this term, Jayanti. Krishna was born on Jayanti. So sometimes people use this term Jayanti for others. It's actually incorrect. Even Balaram's appearance day is not Jayanti. Balaram's appearance day is Purnima. So Jayanti means it's a specific astrological calculation where the Supreme Lord appears, where Krishna appears, which is very auspicious. And a great personality cannot appear at any other time than on an auspicious time. Prabhupada in the purport describes how Maharaj Prickett was not only a great Kshatriya emperor, but also a great devotee of the Lord. Thus, he cannot take his birth at any inauspicious moment. As a proper place and time is selected to receive a respectable personage, so also to receive such a personality as Maharaj Prickett was especially cared for by the Supreme Lord. A suitable moment is chosen. When all good stars assemble together to exert their influence upon the king. Thus he took his birth just to be known as the great hero of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This suitable arrangement of astral influence is never a creation of man's will, but is the arrangement of the superior agent's management of the agency of the Supreme Lord. In the purport, Prabhupada describes a little bit about astrology and how it is a science. Astrology is the science of, in the purport, I think the Prabhupada's description is very, very pertinent. From that, I think I can explain further. Prabhupada describes our actions are judged by higher authorities, the agents of the Lord, and thus we are awarded bodies according to our activities. The law of nature is so subtle that every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars, and a living being obtains his working body to fulfill his terms of imprisonment by the manipulation of such astrological influences. Man's destiny is therefore ascertained by the birth time constellation of stars, and a factual horoscope is made by a learned astrologer. So a living being, every part of our body is influenced by the respective stars. Everything externally to us is influenced by the respective stars. So, according to your birth, In other words, basically what astrology is just a map of your karma. Due to your past activities, you'll suffer and enjoy. So how that will be done, there's a map of that, of the stars. When you're born, there's a particular astrological calculation. I don't know too much about astrology. At any time in your life, there will be particular planets that have a particular influence for you. In other words, at a particular moment, the planets are in particular places for every person. But according to one's birth chart, for one person, he was born when that planet was in his fourth house. So the planet in that particular time will act in that way, and this planet will act in that way. So you can actually read your karma. You can read what influences will be on your body and mind and your external circumstance. Of course, that's destiny. Free will is how we react. So our destiny is charted out, and it can be read. And therefore, it's very helpful in human society to know that. For example, if someone wants to take sannyas, his chart should be looked at. And he'll see what influences are there on him and whether or not it's suitable for him or for his occupation or marriage, compatibility. And also, even philosophically, by seeing that. But karma helps you to understand in a higher authority by seeing that your destiny can actually be predicted. Then you get to understand that there's a higher authority. It also makes you detached. Because we see that we cannot control our destiny. So this was done. This was part of the culture. So we see with Maharaj Prickett, it was also there. 13.
Tasya prita manaraja vipradomya kripadivi chatakam karayanasa vachayitva chamangalam.
King Yudhisthira, who was very satisfied with the birth of Maharaj Prickett, had the purificatory processes of birth performed. Learned Brahmins headed by Domya and Kripa recited auspicious hymns. So there's purificatory processes. Basically, they're called samskaras. I described this term before. Sam means good. Kara means to do. Something like that. It's rituals that can have a good impression on the consciousness. So the most important ritual is called Garbhadan Samskara. You know what this is?
Conception.
The consciousness of the parent at the time of conception affects the particular child they will get. So if the parents purify their consciousness at conception, it will create the atmosphere to attract the good soul. So these Vedic purificatory rites are necessary for a good population. One of the most important aspects of developing a proper society is developing a proper population. Just like you have a temple, you know, the atmosphere of the temple is dependent on the quality of devotees that you have. So if you keep a dirty, disorganized temple, then the atmosphere will attract a particular class of people. If it's very brahminical and clean and disciplined and organized, another type of person will come. So similarly with the consciousness of the society, if you have a proper society, then a particular soul will come. If there's a proper family, that's why commitment is so important in terms of marriage, that there's no divorce. Because if that commitment is there, then Krishna will send a child, a good soul, that will be deserving of a mother and father that stay together. If there's conception simply out of lust, which means there's no commitment, then the soul that will be attracted is that soul who karmically deserves to grow up without a father, or to be not treated or wanted in a particular way. So it's so important, these Vedic purificatory processes for good population, to create the atmosphere to attract good population, and also to create the impressions in the child's consciousness to do the right things. Therefore, this term in India is always, they have good samskaras. What does good samskaras mean? That when he was young, even from previous life, but even from this life, you know, we went to school, there was a big ceremony. So he knows the impression is in his consciousness, education is important. And right from the birth, there's so many impressions in consciousness for that child to do good. Prabhupada, in the previous purport, this is a very good point, and I forgot to mention it, but I'm going to read it again. The samskaras of the school of Sanatana Dharma are highly suitable for creating an atmosphere for taking advantage of good stellar influences. So the samskaras create an atmosphere for taking advantage of the proper influences on your consciousness and your environment for your whole life. And therefore, Garbhadhan Samskara, the first seedling purificatory process prescribed for the higher caste, is the beginning of all pious acts to receive a good and intelligent class of men in human society. So in the next verse, I'm going to read it again. Yudhisthira, who was satisfied with the birth, had purificatory processes performed. Here it says, Jatakam. So this is when the umbilical cord is cut. I believe, Chati Karma. And when the child is born, the first purificatory process is Chati Kara. Then there's Garbhadhan Samskara at conception and other samskaras. So this was performed. And they're necessary. Therefore, all the samskaras, purificatory processes, are not mere formalities or social functions only, but they are all for practical purposes and can be successfully performed by expert Brahmins like Domya and Kripa. So this is necessary, but in this age, it's not possible to do the Vedic rites properly, because there's not the qualified Brahmins. A lot of time it's dependent on the pronunciation of mantras, which is a great skill. So there's not qualified Brahmins. When you go to India, you'll see so obviously there's just not qualified Brahmins. Maybe in the South India there's a few. So because the Brahmins are rare, Prabhupada said, for the purpose of spiritual upliftment in the fallen age, the Goswamis prefer the purificatory processes under Pancharatriki formulas to the Vedic rites. So Pancharatriki formulas is, in other words, Narada Muni. For this particular age, he made a process based on the Vedas, a more simple process based on the Vedas for effective purificatory rites, which is based also more on Bhagavad Dharma. So we follow more Pancharatriki. Not that these things are not in there, but the exact Vedic system can't be followed. But they're necessary. And Prabhupada also said, therefore, all the samskaras, purificatory process, are not mere formalities or social functions only, but they are all for practical purposes and can be successfully performed by expert Brahmins like Domya and Kripa. Any questions? Loud if you do have questions.
It says it is not possible.
It's not registering.
Okay, the question I had is, so there's no possibility of good population, and in the age of Kali, the population all over the world is of Shudra quality, or lower, for want of this purificatory process. So is it that if you have this Garbhadhan Sanskara, then some pure souls will be born?
More pure. More pure souls will be born if this Garbhadhan Sanskara.
Does that mean that the souls that would be attracted, say, to this world system will get purified at birth, at conception? Or?
See, Krishna knows the future. So he puts a soul in a particular womb, right, who is deserving. Now, Garbhadhan Samskara is an indication of the religiosity of the parents. And it affects the soul that will enter into the, that will be conceived. But at the same time, if the family is not very cultured, that will also affect the child that comes. They may perform the Garbhadham Samskara. That will help. But at the same time, if they're not very cultured, that effect will be there in the child's life either, also. And then we see that even though people come to Krishna consciousness and perform Garbhadham Samskara, it does affect the consciousness of the child. But sometimes they also get divorced also later. So that's also in the child's karma, and the child who does it. So it's mixed, but it's definitely, it's an impression to improve the consciousness. It doesn't mean that it makes it perfect, but definitely this Garbhadhan Samskara should be performed. I'm seeing some very nice children who have been produced under this process. It's definitely an indication that the parents are serious about spiritual life. Next verse.
Haranyam gam mahim gramam hastyasvan nipativanam pradatsvanam cha viprebhya prajatirte chatirtavit.
Upon the birth of his son, the king, who knew how, where, and when charity should be given, gave gold, land, villages, elephants, horses, and good food grains to the brahmanas. So the word here is tirthavit. On the occasion of the birthday, tirthavit, he Maharaj Yudhisthira, he knew how to give charity. Charity should be given to people who are qualified to accept charity and are qualified in a need, and that means the Brahmins and the sannyasis are authorized to accept charity from the householders. I think Prabhupada mentions because the right persons, productively for the spiritual advancement of society. Charity is never unprotected or blind. Charity was given, offered to persons who deserve to accept charity by dint of spiritual enlightenment. So charity was meant to be used, this kind of charity was meant to be used to support people who were dedicated full time to the spiritual enlightenment of society and therefore were not engaged in economic development. It wasn't their duty to pursue economic development. And therefore, charity could be given to them. Brahmanas and sannyasis. In other words, if someone dedicates himself to spreading, there should be a class in society who is dedicated to enlightening others. And their duty is to study the Shastra and to teach the Shastra. And therefore, such persons should be maintained by the society comfortably so that they can pursue the very important endeavor of guiding and leading society. So this was the Vanashram system. Therefore it says, Tirthavit, that he understood how to give charity. This is also, one of the rasas to give charity. It's part of chivalry. It's part of chivalry. Just like Nanda Maharaj, on the birth of Krishna, he gave charity to the Brahmins. it was an expression of one's love. You can do it through chivalry. You can express your love indirectly through chivalry. So he expressed, Nanda Maharaj expressed his paternal affection for Krishna by giving in charity.
Nandako ananda bayo jai kaneya lal ki.
What is it?
Hati diya goro diya or diya pala ki.
Something like that. He gave horse, gora, horses, hati, elephants, just like here. And rati, he gave chariots to the Brahmins. So this is also proper and makes things auspicious. So charity to given to the sannyasis and Brahmins who devote themselves to the welfare of the society. And here, jati karma is also again described.
Tam uchur brahmanas tushta rajanam prashrayanvitam esha yasmin prajatanto paranam pora varshava.
The learned Brahmanins who were very satisfied with the charities of the king addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus and informed him that his son was certainly in the line of descendants from the Purus. So the Brahmins were also satisfied. And they addressed him as the chief amongst the Purus. They described his ancestry, which is important. Because there's a term in Sanskrit called Amoghavirya. Amoghavirya means seminal succession. A king usually karmically can only appear in a line of kings. There's a karma also, not only Garbhadhan samskara at conception, but who the family is also has an effect on the child who's born. And especially a king has to be so qualified and powerful to rule the world that practically he can only be born in a family of kings. Where from birth he'll be inculcated with the proper training and impressions to rule the kingdom. Later on we'll see when there was a king, Vaina, who was in line from King Vaina was in line, a king who was in line from Maharaj Anga, who's in line, he was the son of Maharaj Anga, who is in the succession from Dhruva Maharaj. So when Vaina was a cruel son, a cruel king, and he persecuted the Brahmins assassinated him. And then from his arms, they churned his arms to produce Prithu because they needed a king in that succession. A king has to be so powerful to rule the world. So it was a Moghavirya they wanted in the seminal succession. So his dynasty is also important.
Daivena patigatena shukle samstam upeyashi ratova nugrahartaya vishnuna prabha vishnuna.
The Brahman has said, this spotless son has been restored by the all-powerful and all-pervasive Lord Vishnu, the personality of God, in order to oblige you. He was saved when he was doomed to be destroyed by an irresistible supernatural weapon. So again, same point. The Brahmanas were mentioning how Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of God, had protected the spotless son. And there's two reasons why he was protected. One, he was a pure devotee of the Lord. And because he was a pure devotee who had no other desire to satisfy Krishna and was in the realization and mood that Krishna is my maintainer and protector, Krishna naturally reciprocated with his consciousness and mood to protect him. And also because they needed a pious soul to rule the world. He was the only surviving male descendant of Puru, the pious ancestors, forefathers of the virtuous king Yudhisthira. The Lord wants to continue the line of pious kings to rule over the earth as his representatives for the actual progress of peaceful and prosperous life. So that was needed there. And an interesting point here, Lord Krishna, the original personality of Godhead, does the work of protection and annihilation in his capacity of Vishnu. Lord Vishnu is the plenary expansion of Lord Krishna. The all-pervasive activities of the Lord are executed by him in his Vishnu feature. So Lord Krishna does the work of the Yuga avatars in the form of Vishnu. And then this is also describing, later on, the Maharaj Prickett asks the Brahmanas to delineate the qualities of Maharaj Prickett as they see in his astrological chart. So a lot of what's going to be discussed here also is the qualities of a devotee. We saw the qualities of Maharaj Yudhisthira. He was not ambitious. He was completely surrendered to Krishna. So Srimad Bhagavatam has all knowledge. It has all knowledge to, for two reasons it has all knowledge. Because it's meant to attract everyone, so therefore there's knowledge of kings and science and social affairs. And it's not only needed to attract everyone, but it's also to give light in Kali Yuga. So although the main process of self-realization is Bhagavad Dharma, still the principles of Varnashram are given, the principles of the quality of a devotee are given, the qualities of a king who is a devotee are given. So he's described here as Shukle. Shukle means pure or white. He's white, he's spotlessly white. White's the color for purity because he's an unalloyed devotee of the Lord. Such unalloyed devotees of the Lord appear on the earth just to execute the mission of the Lord. As described before, the king has to be a Mahabhagavat to be able to have the intelligence to satisfy everyone, to make a policy that can unify the people. What a leader does is he gives a vision and he unifies people behind that vision to actually unify a country behind a vision of Krishna consciousness, inspire the people to follow their prescribed duties. You need a pure soul. Just like it was described, Maharaj Yudhisthira was continuously serving Krishna. Similarly, Maharaj Prickett was in the same line. He's an unalloyed devotee. And therefore, following and surrender to Krishna, he's empowered by Krishna to do his service. And that's Krishna conscious management. Krishna conscious management is not only one's own personal capabilities, but his ability to surrender to the will of Krishna and therefore get Krishna's direction. Management or leadership means that you have to know what to do. And if you're the king of the world, you have to know what Krishna's plan is, because Krishna's plan is perfect. Therefore, you have to be in contact with the super soul. So all these great kings were in contact with the super soul because they were surrendered devotees. They were shukle. They were pure and white. So Prabhupada describes in the purport, the Lord desires to condition souls hovering in the material creation to be reclaimed, to go back home, back to Godhead. Thus he helps them by preparing the transcendental literatures like the Vedas, by sending missionaries of saints and sages, and by deputing his representatives to spiritual master. Such transcendental literatures, missionaries, and representatives of the Lord are spotlessly white because the contamination of material qualities cannot touch them. They're 100% mahatmanas tu mam partha daivim prakritam ashrutam. They have no desire but to serve Krishna. Therefore, they come under Krishna's internal potency. And therefore, there's no defect, there's no fault in what they do. Tasman namna vishnurata iti loke bhavishyati nasandeho mahabhaga mahabhagavato maham. For this reason, this child will be known in the world as one who is protected by the personality of Godhead. O most fortunate one, There is no doubt that this child will become a first-class devotee and will be qualified with all good qualities. So Maharaj Prickett is known as Vishnu Ratha because in the womb he was protected by Krishna. And Prabhupada discusses this in the purport by paraphrasing a verse from the Upanishads, Katha Upanishads, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Buhunam Yo Buddhadaktikam. The Supreme Lord, Nitya Nityanam, and there's many eternals. There's one supreme eternal, and there's many eternal living entities. Chaitanas, there's one supreme living force, Chaitananam. There's many, you know, living forces. Eko Bahunam, the one, Bahunam many, Yo Buddhadaktikam. He maintains the common, the desires of the others. So Krishna is by nature giving nourishment and protection to the living entities. But the point Srila Prabhupada makes, but for the unalloyed devotees who are exclusively dependent on his shelter, he gives the protection personally. And therefore Maharaj Prickett is protected from the very beginning of his appearance in the womb of his mother. Because he is especially given protection by the Lord, the indication must be concluded that the child be a first-grade devotee with all good qualities. So he's listed here as Mahabhagavato Mahan. He's a Mahabhagavat. Bhagavat means of the personality of Godhead, the devotee. So he's the Mahabhagavat. Haribo. He's the Mahabhagavat. And there's three grades of devotees, Kanishta Adhikari, or Kanishta Bhagavat, Madhyam Bhagavat, Uttama Bhagavat. He's Mahabhagavat. First grade devotee. Prabhupada describes what that means. But those who see everything in the Lord or everything of the Lord and also see in everything an eternal relation to the Lord, so there's nothing within their purview of sight except the Lord are called Mahabhagavats or the first grade devotees. So that's the Mahabhagavat.
Sri Raju Vacha Apyeshavam Sian Rajarshim Punya Shlokam Mahatmana Anuvartita Svidyasasa Sadhu Vadana Sattama.
The good king Yudhisthira inquired, O great souls, will he become as saintly a king, as pious in his very name, and as famous and as glorified in his achievements as others who appeared in this great family? So he's inquiring, and the rest of the purport will be the Brahmins answering this question about what will Maharaj Prickett be like? And his desire is that he's a replica of the dynasty. That's the nature of dynasty. Dynasty carries tradition. So when a child is born into a great dynasty, it's so fortunate because from his very birth, there's demands on him to do right. And there's training for him to be able to fulfill his destiny. It's very hard to deviate when you're born in a dynasty. When for thousands of years people were acting righteous and properly, and that history is there in your family, it's very hard for you to act whimsically in such a circumstance. So very much you become a replica of the dynasty. So they were concerned with this. Okay, we'll discuss the rest tomorrow. Shubhupa ki.